From YouthCube, I'm Randy Edwards. This is QCast. Today, faith-based choirs and communities and churches across the country have produced some of the finest professional musicians the world has ever seen. In this, the first of a two-part series with YouthQ alumnus and Metropolitan Opera tenor David Portillo, we will discuss what it is about youth choir that has impacted David's vocation and career, and even his basic view of life. It's Tuesday, October 29th, 2019. This is Episode 5 of QCast. Good morning. We are sitting in the Red River Radio Studios in Shreveport, Louisiana, with David Portillo. We are here this week preparing for an upcoming Look at the World concert this Sunday night. The performance will be accompanied by the Shreveport Symphony Orchestra. It will involve 200 singers and will feature David and other special guests. L'amour qui m'a tourné la tête, désormais. David, good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you so much, Randy, for having me. I appreciate it.
It's good to have you here. And we want to just talk a little bit about your early years in getting acquainted with singing and such. Can you remember what age you were when you first decided you really wanted to be a good singer? Do you know when that was?
You know, it's funny because people ask that a lot. And it's, I can think of several examples of times when I knew that I liked it, but I never knew that this was definitely going to be my career. I mean, that goes for a pretty long time, even into adulthood. I definitely remember learning that I loved to sing in front of people, probably in a solo at church. I remember that I was singing with my mother one time for First Baptist Church, and I was probably in about the fifth or sixth grade. And I remember thinking, oh, you know what? A lot of people were really nice afterward, and they liked what I did, and I feel like I didn't have to work that hard to do it. It was something that I enjoyed, so I'm going to keep trying to do this.
Yeah. And, how old were you?
If I was in the sixth grade, then that was, you know, 12 probably.
Yeah, well, singing with your mom is a good thing when your mom is Peggy Portillo.
Exactly.
Because she is a wonderful singer, wonderful technique,
musician.
And she passed on that technique to you.
Yeah.
Even at that young age, you were singing really well, really correctly, and that was cool.
I was always in choir under her or under some really great musicians because we had a great heritage of choral singing around us. And it was because she was a great music teacher, I think I also learned to see somebody who worked really hard at it. Mm-hmm. And I, of course, always thought like, oh, I don't want to work that hard. But the fact that I could see that as an example is actually really telling because I think she really ingrained in us that it does take practice. It's a skill that takes time, and I'm very, very honored and blessed to be her son.
Yeah, well, and so what's that like taking lessons from your mom? I mean, some people say don't try to teach your kids. I think that's said a lot about piano for sure,
yeah.
And yet, you know, Van Cliburn's mother was his first piano teacher as well. She did pretty well, I'd say.
Yeah. I think that, you know, if you ask my mom, I don't think she would ever say that she was my voice teacher, but she definitely had the great example of good singing, of singing cleanly, of being precise musically. And I think that's more of a lesson than necessarily getting in there and teaching you how to do scales and how to, you know, and teaching all the technique.
It's almost a work ethic in a way.
Yeah, for sure. It's the same thing. It's just being a really good example of a great worker and of a good singer.
Well, and she herself was able to model that.
For
sure. Because she could do it herself.
Yeah. And again, you know, I think we went to a church where there were great singers around. There were great male singers that you could also hear and think like, oh, I can make that sound. And so I would, you know, like model a lot of those sounds too. I never felt like I was trying to be taught. I always felt like I was just learning from what I heard.
Wow. So some things can be taught, but other things have to be caught.
Yeah,
I guess
exactly.
That's the way that works.
Huh? It's a lot of listening and even more modeling. So that's good.
So what was going on with you musically during your middle school and high school years? What were you involved in?
I was definitely a choir kid right from the sixth grade. When I could choose an elective, I chose to do choir. I had, again, a really good experience with a choir director. Her name is Debbie Bridges, and she still teaches music at Northside Independent School District in San Antonio, Texas. She taught us a really good sight reading skills, a very, very responsible discipline of singing in choir, and a lot of people were kind of scared of her because she was strict, and she required the classroom to be really quiet in a very efficient place of work. And I think that scares middle schoolers when you think about mm-hmm. You go to choir just to slack off, but really we were working really hard.
Yeah.
And really we put on some great concerts, and mm-hmm. I think we had some really good choirs. So that was middle school time. You also begin to, especially in Texas, we have these times when you get opportunities to either compete or to, we had region choir, you had UIL solo and ensemble, and I was really into those as well. So I kind of could always see how I was faring in comparison to other kids my age. Mm-hmm. And that you know, is a personal sort of competition thing, of course, because you're just singing a solo for yourself
right.
to maybe get a grade one or whatever. But it also, you know, kept you in check with knowing how other people were singing, and you could always listen to other kids. I think I grew a lot in singing when I got to high school and realized that I needed to sing more solos. So that was, I not needed to sing more solos, but I was asked to sing more solos.
Right.
And so I, you work on more music as well. When I was in high school, I sang in the Texas All-State Choir for my freshman year, which was kind of a big thing I didn't realize, because there were only a handful of freshmen who made that choir.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really lucky to be able to do that, because I think that really put the fire in me that this is what I was going to do. But I loved choir.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of the basis for my singing, was mm-hmm. always being being in a choir, leading a choir. I always looked up to my choir directors and choral conductors, and that's kind of what I wanted to do. So I think in high school was when I got the edge for, oh, this can be a career as a music educator.
Yeah. So we'll talk about that again in a little bit, but is there a memory or two that stands out for you from your high school years that was just kind of a highlight of musical experience for you?
Mm, I definitely remember, all four, because I was an All-State Choir member for 4 years,
yeah.
which is another...
Which is wonderful. What an experience.
Yeah, I was very, very lucky for that. And all four of those concerts,
Well, you say
remember.
Lucky, I have to stop you. You keep saying lucky, and I have to stop you, because I know your work ethic, and you worked hard for that.
I was very invested in it, and I was really, really blessed to be able to do those. I am so... So I remember those four. I also, we talked about this a little bit before, but I sang Nessun Dorma my freshman year of high school with the wind ensemble of my high school.
All right. I bet that was wonderful, wasn't it?
It was something. A 14-year-old trying to sing this operatic aria that's, you know, requires years and years of experience. And, you know, it's basically like American Idol goes to Holmes High School in San Antonio.
Yeah. So did you sing the high B at the end?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, it was very light and pretty and beautiful, but it wasn't a kind of high B that's required nowadays. I remember that very, very clearly. I also remember a youth cue solo that I did that following summer at Coral Gables, in Coral Gables at the Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church in Florida, which was, I think, one of the first youth cue concerts.
It was the very first festival. It was prototype, 1995. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of my first solos. Mm-hmm. And I definitely remember being just overwhelmed with the response and also just not knowing that, you know, I didn't know if what I did was right or wrong. I just remember coming off and being like really overwhelmed emotionally, mm-hmm. and thinking like, oh, I can do this if I want to. So those little solo things were parts of that. But I still always loved singing in choir. That was the most, I did that more in the amount of time for sure than I did singing solo.
Tell us about your undergraduate work at UTSA, and you really started off in music education, mm-hmm. didn't you?
Yeah.
You were headed out to be a teacher, right?
Yes, I did my bachelor's in music I did a BM at the University of Texas, San Antonio, go Roadrunners.
Yeah.
And I did my student teaching in the fall of 2002, where I did 6 weeks of elementary and 6 weeks of secondary education. At the same time, I was still taking lessons. And throughout your voice training, in a lot of universities participate in an organization called NATS, which is National mm-hmm. Association of Teachers of Singing.
Sure.
And they have a yearly competition depending on the region. In the fall, that usually, you know, you get a handful, if not very many, universities come with represented singers of your age grade, and then you begin to basically you get first through third prize or whatever.
Right.
You maybe win a few bucks, but it's really just about, you know, going
right.
there and
right.
and getting critiqued and getting feedback for what you're doing from other people than just your university professors school.
When you went to NATS conventions where we all performed, and, you know, did you go away from those weekends just brain dead because
oh,
you had heard so much music, so much great singing
yeah.
in that period of time that you just, I remember just leaving numb,
yeah,
you
yeah.
know, after it was over.
And really at the time, you don't realize what that numbness is. You think like, oh, well, you know, I just participated in what everybody else was going to, but you really were ingratiated in all this new sound.
Yep.
And really, again, you know, when you hear a good modeling of good singing, you're learning from that. That's such
exactly.
a huge teaching point. So I was very lucky that I was, again, like a part of that every year. I didn't really do very well until my junior and senior year. And so when I was a senior in college doing my education major, I realized that I was still singing. I was now singing operatically. I was mm-hmm. singing an opera role for my undergrad, and I was ready to maybe continue teaching, studying with a teacher. And so I wanted to go to University of North Texas, but I knew I still had to do my my student teaching. So I did that in the fall, and then immediately in the spring I went to the University of North Texas and studied with Cody Garner, who is my second teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But my first undergraduate teacher, of course, was very, very excited for me to continue in a performance track for my next degree. But she said, you should definitely get your education degree for this one, just to, so you have the paper, so you can have something that you can look at that that means something sometimes for a different job.
So you were at UNT for a couple of years,
yes.
Right? Finished your master's. Mm-hmm. What then?
You just audition for every single thing.
Did you ever have a bad audition?
Oh, did I? Did I ever? I definitely feel like more than half of my auditions were usually bad ones. But I think a lot also that Nats teaches you is that it's one day is what you have, and if the way you feel and sound that day is the way it's going to happen, and you can't change anything about it. You can work really, really hard to prepare as much as possible in the things you can handle, but then the other things you can't handle, whether it's allergies, whether it's stress, whether it's sleep. You can handle sleep with other things, but like you can definitely you can't think every audition is going to be the end all audition. You have to go in there with as much prepared, and then kind of let what you prepared come out for that audition. So I, in my while I was at University of North Texas, auditioned for a couple of young artist programs that were in the summer. So I did two summer programs, one at Opera North in New Hampshire and Vermont, and then my second summer I was at Chautauqua Opera, which is upstate New York.
Right.
And those were nice little small paying gigs that you went and you sang in the choir and you covered some roles. Sometimes you sang a small role. I was, again, really, really fortunate to even get into those programs, because a lot of times when you're still in school, you don't get the chance to do that. And so I was very I loved those summer programs. I also came back to University of North Texas with a little more under my belt as far as experience. And again, I was hearing so many more singers than I was just in my school. So I was able to kind of keep taking some voice techniques, some repertoire especially, and just keep working on music, which is really all you can ask for. The opportunity is once you get the opportunity, it's really that's the important part of getting that. So when I was done with University of North Texas, the next summer, I made the Merrill Opera program at the San Francisco Opera, which was a very high caliber of program that many, many, many people auditioned for. And I was lucky enough to get into that. I think there were only 24 singers that summer. And my first summer, I performed in just the concert, which was an outdoor concert at the time. And I had such an amazing opportunity, amazing time there. And I didn't have a job for the next year. I knew that the fall was quote unquote open, but then I knew that I had an outreach opera gig in Cincinnati Opera the next spring. So I was kind of freaked out, how am I going to pay my bills? What am I going to do? And I got home to San Antonio and I started teaching some middle schoolers voice for a 1 week or so. And I got a call from Tulsa Opera that they needed somebody to come and do their outreach opera and to sing in the choir for one of the shows, one of the productions. And so I decided to go ahead and do that. And it ended up being extended. So I was there working for 3 months or so.
Wow.
Again, none of these things are really high paying.
Yeah.
But they come at all the right time.
Right.
And I accepted the opportunity as it came. And I felt really confident once I got there because I had just gone to Marilla,
Right.
But I also was still very much a new freelance singer.
Right. It's interesting because so often in your interview here, I'm hearing you say over and over again, I was so fortunate, or I was so lucky, I was so... What I see in you as we work together, like at the Look at the World that we're doing, over and over again, I see in you gratitude. Mm. And that seems to be what just fuels your fire for everything that you do. Mm. There's no sense of entitlement. Mm. I don't know what we have in our minds about what an operatic tenor is going to be, but sometimes we think of them as being rather egocentric, and you just don't fit that bill at all. And I think that is a huge part of your success.
Yeah, I think a lot of any job really is staying very aware that a lot is not in your control. And I think that the same thing with auditions. You prepare as much as possible, and then the parts that you can control, you hope that those work out well. And if they don't, it's also, you're not also beating yourself up about stuff. Especially in performance, I'm very aware when people become entitled, but then they also sometimes drop the hardest when they're not successful in something.
Right.
And
right.
So that's something that I'm very, I have to be aware that I have to keep even keeled about things, and you have to find a balance of knowing your expectations, but then also knowing your boundaries, but then also knowing, what's coming to you is a lot of luck.
Yeah.
I'm still very happy that those initial experiences did come my way, because honestly, there were plenty of other people who could have gotten them too.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm very.
But you rose to the top, and there are reasons for that. Reasons for that. David, thank you for joining us today, and we're going to continue this interview in our next episode of QCast. And so, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Randy.
Here's what's coming up in the next episode of QCast. As we continue the interview with opera great David Pertillo, we'll discuss specific ways we youth choir directors can give more significant and longer-lasting positive impacts upon the students we direct. We'll see you next time on QCast.